Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, November 24th, 2016. Happy Turkey Day. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a chilly and damp 37 degrees and raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Truth Crisis, Accelerating Technology, Computer Vision, and AI Angst. We looked at a lot of different things this week. We were looking at fake versus real news and how they're going to start utilizing artificial intelligence to determine what is true and what is not true. We looked at Google and Google's truth algorithm that will be eventually not even requiring an algorithm, because we discovered that they are teaching AI to teach itself. So we have companies such as NVIDIA that have created supercomputers, computers that can see. We are adding senses to artificial intelligence. They can read. We even read about them teaching computers to be able to now judge a book by its cover. They are taking over all kinds of jobs, and not just blue-collar jobs, but white-collar jobs as well, such as lawyers and HR people. So where is that going to leave us? We discovered back a few days ago, there was a story out of CNBC. Forget Dream Team employees. Business leaders just want great technology, and they show a little robot delivering food in a restaurant. You know, that was always kind of where we saw robots. And remember, there's different kinds of robots. There's tin can robots, and then there's artificial intelligence in the machine. We also have autonomous vehicles and autonomous weaponry to worry about, and Atlas robots. It'll be able to move around. We have also our smart devices, smart everything, the internet of everything that is going to be connected and feeding data back to the machine. And all that data is going to be collated and put into a database to be able to draw conclusions about you. You know, we saw a study near the end of the show yesterday in regards to AI angst, and there was study that came out of MIT Technology Review showing that a lot of concern is being raised now in the industry about where this technology is going to take us in the future and how this is going to affect us. We've discussed the law of exponential returns and how quickly this technology is evolving, even though they're telling us, don't worry about it, Jenny, because it's going to be 50 years on out. It's not going to be 50 years on out. We are finding on a daily basis a story or two that says, oh, this is happening much faster than we ever imagined. And that is because we have technology begetting technology now. And when that happens, we now are on an upward slope like we have never seen. But human drivers are going to probably bully self-driving cars. That's where we ended up yesterday. They said people don't like being told what to do, and I can guarantee you that. I know driving is my last bastion of freedom, and if I have some sort of facial recognition going on in my vehicle, deciding whether or not I'm having a moment of road rage and taking control, I could guarantee you that I am not going to be a very pleasant person. I found a story last night titled, This Startup is teaching machines to think, reason, and communicate like us. And that seems to be what is happening now. We've talked about all these initiatives that are all happening at the very same time. We have the Brain Initiative and the Precision Medicine Initiative and this whole DNA 23andMe curing all disease, living therapeutics, programming cells, and being able to create little organisms that can get inside of us and even detect when we are not working within parameters and then create medications inside of us to cure us. Little nanobots in our blood. Nanobots curing cancer. gene editing humans. I mean, this is everything we've talked about here over the last few years, and it is all coming together in one big scary technological takeover. And now as machines are allowed to learn and think without any human intervention, where do you think that that is going to leave us? We found out Watson is working at 20 different cancer hospitals now, scanning through records and giving suggestions and recommendations as to treatments or finding different illnesses that maybe the doctors missed the first time around. And oncologists around the world are pretty amazed by Watson's capabilities. Well, guys, like I've said many times, this is just the beginning. And we have now this technology war that is taking place between all the tech big boys and all the laboratories and all the different countries. Mind you, China is way ahead of us in this game. Beidou has been experimenting with AI for a very long time, and they have one of the former Google AI people now working for them, and they have bet their whole future on artificial intelligence. This startup is teaching machines to think, reason, and communicate like us. Meluba's AI can read a passage and then answer questions about it. This says, start counting the days until the robot takes your job. Well, we've said it before, but sounds like it is starting to spread into the mainstream. People are getting worried. While AI is getting very powerful very quickly, and more jobs are threatened with automation, don't worry about it, Johnny, because we are not yet at that point of science fiction where we are communicating as equals with robots. But guys, by the end of the show, I found something this evening or this afternoon that was pretty disturbing to me in regards to the coming anthropomorphizing of AI. And I don't know, it's left me kind of shaken up. Anyway, let's read this. Sure, some robots already understand the concepts of trust and regrets, and they are teaching them also to learn emotions. We're going to look at that in a little while. But machines cannot yet think, reason, or communicate at an advanced level. And the key word in that sentence was yet. Microsoft's Taybot. We learned all about Tay. Tay turned into the racist Nazi sex fiend. Tay, which tried to learn about humanity from reading Twitter and quickly became an angry racist, so they say, serves as a clear example of limitations of today's technology. Siri is another example. She can give you the weather forecast for your zip code, but cannot describe her feelings on mass incarceration or even comb through the fine print of that contract that you've been asked to sign. But don't worry about it, because that's about to change. Teaching machines to think and behave more like us is what Mo Musha and the team at Meluba are working on. Deep learning has been used to solve problems in speech recognition, machine translation, and image processing. Remember, they now have given computers eyes, and you will see it in applications like self-driving cars. Self-driving cars that make us feel angst, according to the study. But it hasn't been as utilized in the space of natural language understanding, says Mushba, VP of product development. Fundamentally speaking, we are trying to solve machine literacy, getting machines to the point where they can truly understand how to read, write, and speak like human beings. Meluba's current artificial intelligence is able to process words from a Wikipedia page, a George R.R. Martin novel, or a medical document, and then answer factual questions about the text. It can also currently read in 10 languages. Oh my God. So there you go. This is going to be pretty insane. This AI, for example, could tell you what instrument Jerry Garcia played, or how Eddard Stark died, or about the side effects of a new treatment. And Musha says that Maluba, a nonsense word made up by the founder's computer science professor, can pull this off without giving its AI any previous training in any given domain, scientific or otherwise, and is usually required with machine learning. Questions that have definite answers are what we've tackled up to date, says Maluba's research scientist Anam Trishler. But we are now in the process of building new algorithms and data sets, of having AI answer ambiguous questions. So not just about who did what or what happened next, but synthesizing information and making deductions about people's motivations or political machinations. And I'm telling you guys, there are a couple stories out here talking about people's motivations. And not only that, but being able to read facial expressions as well as political machinations tell you they are looking at this election and this debacle and this, you know, whole truth crisis they're calling for fixing. They are going to utilize that for the future to be able to utilize artificial intelligence in helping us make decisions. Remember, we put too many emotions into our decisions, and those emotions can cause us to act hastily and maybe not make the best decisions. And the scary part of the matter is that if we hand off making our decisions to some sort of machine, we better be careful what we are asking for here. We will become slaves to that machine. Skynet will be born, hatched, and controlling everything that happens in our society. And hey, it will be convenient. It'll be easy. We can go along eating grapes, thinking philosophical things, trying to figure out how the universe was created, being artistic, and coming up with wonderful ways to be happy and be in love. I mean, that isn't the way of the world, people. I hate to tell you, Mr. Feinauer, fifth grade, there is no free lunch. And if they're trying to sell you a free lunch, then start looking for what the payoff is. It's a pretty scary thought. So anyway, the application of this technology, once commercialized, is quite obvious and wide-ranging. From helping sleep-deprived students rip through 200 pages of reading material in an instant, to aiding law clerks on better research for an upcoming civil rights case. And since no one reads the fine print, this type of AI could even save you money on your car rental, or in an extreme case, protect you from signing away your kidneys for harvesting. You know, it's going to be so convenient augmenting our brains to the artificial intelligence that can do all of our reading and our thinking and our writing and our answering for us. This is what this is all about. Our children being sucked into the matrix right now before our eyes is what they are setting our children up for. They want them to feel like they want to embrace this machine. We found that there's a big psyop right now, of course, trying to convince us that AI knows better. AI will be able to pick the good from the bad. AI will be able to pick the truth from the non-truth. Take it a step further, and we have just put ourselves out of our source of income. We have just made ourselves obsolete, man. Says we have a chance to make machines better than we are. And that's exactly the problem. But it's not like AI provides us with ready-made solutions. It only allows us to manifest solutions that we decide on. At its best, artificial intelligence promises to bring about positive social and economic impacts. At least that is Maluba's vision. But while they say 45% of jobs people are paid to do could be automated, with currently demonstrated technologies already 45%, there is still a long way to go before AI will free us from menial and monotonous work, even at a cognitive level. This means it'll be far longer before you'll find an android doing your laundry or cooking dinner or serving as an impartial judge in a court of law. Ding, ding, ding. I don't know, they're saying, which will probably never happen. But I'm telling you, they are able now to determine just by your face whether or not you are likely to be a criminal. They could tell whether or not you are lying by micro expressions being looked at by a camera back-ended to artificial intelligence. We're going to look at those today as well. Guys, this is not in the not-too-distant future. The big point here is, if we ever trust AI to run software systems or manage traffic or do riskier things like grow with our brains. And remember, we actually saw a TED Talk about that, the augmented reality, and how in the future humans are going to have a chip implanted right at birth that'll learn everything about you from day one of life. And it will be your constant companion, friend, and assistant in your head to help you keep track of all those daily tasks that are just so difficult to remember. It'll help you read. It'll help you augment your intelligence and your memory. Guys, this is not where we want to go. I do not think that humanity's next step in evolution is merging with the machine, and they are convincing society that this is exactly what we need. It is going to make us ripe for takeover. It is going to make us a node on a network that can be controlled and turned on and off at will. We can also get infected with a virus. We'll have to have shape-shifting immune systems and antiviruses. It's a frightening, frightening thought. So, I ran across something yesterday in regards to what I've been talking about, the embracing of the machine by the younger generations and some of the adverse effects that I've seen personally, that friends have shared with me personally, three case studies also that we read from a child to a teen to an adult about the addiction. We have dug deep into the dopamine button, the dopamine connection, that addiction that we have to our glowing screen. Well, a story came out, and there is a new documentary, and I believe that the person who made the documentary was a doctor from Stanford who started to see that there were definitely some issues. It is called Screenager, and it is documenting the drug-like effect of screen time on the teenage brain. Teenagers today have never known the world without the internet, and that's exactly what I had said. My generation is really the last generation that knew the world before and after. So we've been able to kind of stand on that cusp, turn it off when need be, and know what life was like before the internet. But when kids used to go outside and play, well, teenagers today have never known the world without the internet, which may be why half of all adolescents say that they are addicted to their digital devices. Ding! Dopamine! It's amazing. In her new documentary, Screenagers, Dr. Delaney Rustin explores why young people are so drawn to social media and video games and what effect it is having on their brains. It's very interesting. I don't know. We'll see here really quick. Maybe we can play this trailer. Hold on.
The nominee. But first, a new report looks at how digital devices are taking a toll on kids and families. The report issued yesterday by Common Sense Media found half of all young people feel they are addicted to their devices. Almost 60% of adults think their kids are addicted too. And a third of parents and teens say they argue daily about screen time. Now, a new documentary explores this topic and offers ideas about what families might do to navigate these waters. William Brangham is back with our look.
The documentary is called Screenagers, and in it, Dr. Delaney Rustin explores the complex relationship teenagers have with their screens, both the pleasures they take in sharing their lives online with their friends, as well as the darker side, those who lose control of their digital habits and spiral into damaging behavior.
When I went to hug him, I could feel the bones in his back, and that was scary.
The film also looks at the latest research about the impact all this screen time has on the brains of young people.
You have a brain that is wired for what in psychology is called seeking behavior, the kind of thing that a Google search gives you, something new, something stimulating, something different.
Throughout the film, Rustin also turns the camera on herself, exploring the real and all too common conflicts that flare up as she and her family haggle over screen time.
What should the rules be? Because we don't have any right now.
I think the rules should be there is no rules. It's not like I'm on it 24/7.
When you had it, you're always checking it. And I don't you think that...
Well, if you put this in front of me, yes, I will go on it. And yes, I can find something to do on it.
Tessa, why are you so mad?
Okay, just get dressed. I'm sorry you're crying.
I met with Delaney Rustin last week in Washington, D.C. I wonder what was it that initially, what made you want to do this film?
I was having a really hard time as a mom with my two kids. You know, my son wanted to play video games a lot, and my daughter really wanted more and more social media, and I felt completely out of control. And as a doctor, I was thinking, what is the impact of all this screen time? I knew as a mom that every day there was tension in the house. And I felt completely out of control on what to do, what kind of limits to set, how this was affecting them.
Now that you have done all this research, what was it, I'm curious, that most surprised you that you found?
Well, I think one thing that really helped me to start to be a better parent around this is to learn that the dopamine that's secreted in the brain's pleasure center when we get new bits of information and we look at the screens, that center of the brain is most activated when we're kids and we're teenagers. So knowing that they are so pulled into these in a way that we can't even understand has made me not be as angry at them, but realize there's a lot more I need to do as in my parenting.
So these are little electronic drug delivery devices. I know that's a crude way to put it, but that's what you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing that there's many studies that look at MRI scans of the brain of kids who play a lot of video games, 20 hours or more of video games a week. And when they compared them to people who are addicted to, say, drugs or alcohol, their brain scans are similar. So something is really happening on a physiological level. It's not just psychological.
We exposed young mice to switching sounds and lights.
In the film, Rustin talks with researchers who are studying what multitasking, switching rapidly back and forth between digital devices, does to the brain function of mice.
Afterwards, we looked at the effect on learning and found that the ability of these young mice to learn new things was very much compromised. It took them 3 times longer or more to learn how to go through a maze than the non-exposed young mice.
We're exposing a whole generation of children to these rapid-paced media, and we have no clue what it does to the brain. And if it's the same as we see in the mice, then this is a very shocking news.
But does that kind of stuff terrify you, or do you think this research is not necessarily analogous? I mean, how are people supposed to process that information?
You know, I think it's a question about how much we're giving kids full potential in everything that they do. And to me, a big issue is about how much time they have with all sorts of skills that they're learning offline. Social engagement, competency, talking to people face to face. I think if we're giving them a lot of those situations, that even if there's some concern about attention span and possibly some changes in the brain, I think the humans are resilient enough, and already we're seeing people are not, you know, dropping like flies from screen time. I don't think we're at a place yet where we need to be really alarmist.
Let's say I'm a parent and I come to you and I say, I have a young kid, maybe a 10-year-old daughter. when should I get her a phone? What would you tell this parent?
I think, you know, obviously every kid is different, and that's really important, and every situation in the home is different. But I do worry that it is getting younger and younger. And when we bring them, start having them in elementary school, we have to wonder, when is it too young that they're not going to be able to resist the impulse to check or to post?
Every girl in the picture is locked into her phone. Peralta knocks it into center. David tonight, 2 for 2, a leadoff single here in the fourth. And nobody noticed. We need to, can we do an intervention?
This is all about teaching kids self-control. And what we've learned through the research is that it's absolutely teachable. So I would really discourage a family from getting a child a device when they don't feel like they're going to be able to control themselves from when they use it.
Kids are constantly distracted.
Rustin has been taking her film across the country recently, holding screenings in dozens of cities, encouraging parents and kids to come, to watch, and then to continue the conversation at home.
You know what I think is really exciting is that kids and teenagers actually want to talk about these issues. And I think that it doesn't take that long in homeroom or in some other setting to ask these questions about, you know, what are you struggling with your screen time, or what do you see happening on social media? And once we say we want to hear from you, then they care, as opposed to what I see so often is this message of zero tolerance, let's just take everything away and get mad at you. That's not going to get kids to open up and feel comfortable to be a part of this, and that's really what this is going to take.
Now, what's disturbing, I mean, she's on the right track. She sees as a doctor that it is causing a dopamine addiction in the brain, but the problem here is her children are already far along the path of having these devices where she can't take them away permanently, and so she's saying, well, you got to give them these devices and, you know, talk about the addiction, talk about limiting your screen time and actually having face-to-face intervention or face-to-face communication with your friends like we used to when we were kids. But I think that they need to be eliminated. I think that the only way that we are going to be able to stop this machine from moving forward is by preventing our children from getting sucked into this machine. Now, I got a little bit off topic by talking about that, but I thought it was pretty important. But here's some things that, you know, this technology is going to normalize in the future. We have an Israeli company, we talked about these guys before, called Face2Face. Or this one is Faceception. Sorry, that Face2Face is the other one. Faceception is claiming that they can spot terrorists by simply analyzing their faces and say that it is working with a leading Homeland Security division to identify potential threats. Now, what you didn't see when I was playing that interview was that there was a baseball game going on in the one scene. There were maybe 6 or 8 teenage girls sitting at the baseball game, and every single one of them weren't paying attention to the baseball game. They were all sitting there looking at their phones and taking selfies of themselves at the baseball game, posting them on social media. So we have sucked our children into this complete digital interaction. No privacy, right? We've talked about that before. Kids don't see any need for privacy. They will put everything that they do every minute of the day online to get attention from their friends. But as all of this information is going up to the cloud about an individual, it is ripe for extraction and for being able to be utilized to profile you. So they could take faces now and determine whether or not you have certain traits, whether or not you could be a potential threat. This company, Faceception, founded in 2014, uses computer vision, ding, ding, and machine learning to profile people from just a facial image and says that it can reveal a range of personality traits and types. So far, it has 15 different classifiers, including extrovert, genius, academic researcher, professional poker player, bingo player, brand promoter, white-collar offender, pedophile, or terrorist. However, Faceception notes on his website that this is customizable and it is a relevant classifier, and it could be built if the desired behavior originates from the person's DNA. DNA is the key, and, you know, DNA is the key to everything. I think if it had to come down to one thing that we've talked about that is going to create the end of the human race, it is the understanding of the genome and being able to splice and dice, being able to create synthetic DNA to then reproduce and create life forms. Remember, we saw that there was that synthetic DNA that was able to reproduce now. To take this to the next step, they will be trying to recreate humans. We saw that Georgia Porgy Church was even working on creating the synthetic human genome. So that research is already underway. You know, it's not going to be too many more generations before we are not going to be 100% human any longer. Anyway, a marketing pitch for this Faceception explains that the technology goes way beyond facial recognition and it can predict terrorists, and it references last year's Paris attack as an example of how the technology can work. And we read this before. Only 3 of the 11 terrorists had previous records, but their technology classified 9 of those as potential terrorists with no prior knowledge. So, ding ding, pre-crime. We'll be able to scan you, tell whether or not you're going to be smart, whether or not you're going to be a white-collar criminal, or whether or not a pedophile or a terrorist. Machine vision algorithm has also learned to recognize hidden facial features. Microexpressions reveal your deepest emotions, even when you are trying to hide them. And now, machine vision algorithms have learned to spot them with a wide-ranging application from law enforcement to psychological analysis. Gotta love it when an artificially intelligent machine will be able to psychoanalyze you. Most people are good at recognizing the ordinary emotions on other people's faces, but there's another set of facial expressions that most people are most entirely unaware of. In the late 1960s, psychologists discovered that when humans try to hide their emotions, they often display their real feelings in micro-expressions that appear and disappear in the blink of an eye. These fleeting facial expressions have fascinated psychologists and the general public ever since, and it turns out that while most people are entirely oblivious to micro-expressions, a tiny subset of individuals can spot them accurately and use them to tell when people are hiding their true feelings or when they are downright lying. A significant industry has grown up that focuses on training people at better recognizing micro-expressions. Law enforcement officials and anti-terrorist agents are often trained in this way in a hope that it'll help them spot individuals who are up to no good. But whether this training works or not is subjective, and it may be that most people do not have the sensory and cognitive skills to catch micro-expressions, but don't worry about it, because there is another way. In recent years, machine vision has improved at such a rapid rate that it has even, ding, surprised experts in the field. What did I tell you? Another one. It's just happening so rapidly. Well, today, machines are equipped with the best artificial intelligence algorithms, and they can routinely outperform humans at object recognition and facial recognition, and have now begun to match them in recognizing expressions and the emotional charge they carry. That has raised an interesting prospect. Could machines become better at recognizing micro expressions than humans? Well, today we get an answer thanks to the work of Zairobi Lee at the University of Oulu in Finland. These guys have built and tested the first machine vision system capable of spotting and recognizing micro-expressions, and they say that it is already better than humans at the task. The rapid developments in AI in recent years have come about partly because of improved methods of computing. But these machines are useless without vast and accurate databases to train them. So the first task for Lee was to co-create a database with his co-workers of videos showing micro-expressions in realistic conditions. Micro-expressions tend to occur when individuals hide their feelings under conditions of relatively high stakes, and that is not easy to reproduce. Lee tackled this problem by asking a group of 20 individuals to watch a series of videos designed to invoke strong emotions among them, and these people were given a strong incentive to avoid showing any emotions during the tasks. They were told that they would have to fill in a long, boring questionnaire explaining any emotions that they did display. And as a result, 16 of the 20 individuals produced 164 micro-expressions between them, which the team recorded on a high-speed camera at 100 frames per second. And then, of course, they fed that into the AI. Finally, the algorithm then classified the emotion on display as positive, negative, or surprise, a process it learns from the training database. And so, this has got to make you wonder what kind of future applications they could use this for. Lee and his group picked out lie detection, law enforcement, and psychotherapy, but it is easy to imagine this being used in job interviews as well as assessments, and even in a Google Glass device in everyday life, and soon there will be nowhere to hide. I mean, guys, they will be able to tell whether or not instantly you are lying by looking at your face. They'll be able to tell whether or not potentially in the future, based upon your genetics, you could be a criminal, a terrorist, or a pedophile. We found out the other day machine learning is already working on judging books by their covers. Well, now they are working on judging people by their faces. First impressions count, but they are notoriously subjective. But now computers have learned to make snap judgments just like humans do. Social psychologists have long known that humans make snap judgments about each other based on nothing more than the way we look, and in particular, our faces. We use these judgments to determine whether a new acquaintance is trustworthy or clever or dominant or sociable or humorous and so on. And these decisions may or may not be right and are by no means objective, but they are consistent. And given the same face and the same conditions, people tend to judge it in the same way. And that raises an interesting possibility. Rapid advances in machine vision and facial recognition have made it straightforward for computers to recognize a wide range of human facial expressions and even rate faces by attractiveness. So is it possible for a machine to look at a face and to get the same first impression that humans make? Well, we find out there is a group working with Mel Curie at the University of Notre Dame, and they have trained a machine learning algorithm to decide whether a face is trustworthy or dominant in the same way as humans do. The team asked participants to rate 6,300 black and white pictures of faces, and each face was rated by 32 different people for trustworthiness and dominance, and by 15 people for IQ and age. And having gathered all this data, the team uses 6,000 images to train their machine vision algorithm. And this result makes for interesting reading. Of course, the machine reproduces the same behavior that it has learned from humans. And when presented with a face, the machine gives more or less the same values for trustworthiness, dominance, age, and IQ as a human would. This is just insane, guys. Lie detector machines of your face. And they will be able to scan you at any time without your knowledge. The results are clear. It turns out that the machine rates both actors in a similar way to the way humans they portray, all scored poorly in trustworthiness. And our models output remarkably similar predictions between subjects and their actors, attesting to the accuracy of the portrayals in their films. So what is this going to mean for all of us? Well, it's going to mean a pretty insane future. Let's see, we got about 20 minutes left. We talked about a technology, briefly I mentioned it the other day, about a camera that can take skins of someone's face, and they can even take pictures of like George Bush or Donald Trump off the internet and make a skin of a face. And then you can have somebody sitting behind a camera talking, and they can put the skin of that face over your face in the output and make it look like you are Donald Trump or George W. Bush speaking. It's a very frightening thing. And as we move forward with these technologies, with these visual processing units, with these artificial intelligences that can match human modeling from the way we think to the way we move to the way we speak. We're going to look at that in a minute. It's got to really make you wonder what you're going to be able to believe in the future. And I really think that that's what this fake news versus truth crisis all boils down to. They are trying to shake your foundations. They need to break it all down. They need to make you question everything. But the problem is that because of this dopamine addiction that we have addicted society with, we're going to tend to trust the machine. We can get our answers from Google. Don't trust that crazy tinfoil hat wearing right winger over there. They don't know what they're talking about. No, trust us. We will tell you what is right. We will fact check things for you. We are all about convenience here in the technology world. I'm telling you, they're being successful at all of this. A research team recently developed a new method for real-time facial reenactment that works with a regular web camera, overcoming several challenges in computer vision technology, and it is as creepy as hell. In a paper, researchers lay out some key challenges facing computer modeling, which would be reconstructing a scene from a video. It's very difficult for computers to do, but the approach they have taken allows them to analyze a film frame by frame and alter the video as it plays. The resulting motion capture allows the team to record a subject's facial expressions with an off-the-shelf camera and then render those movements as the video plays out in real time. Again, the effect is both impressive and very uncanny. And what is especially interesting is about this new method is how seamless it actually is. The results here could be a new software that easily allows for digital manipulation of videos without a lot of specialized hardware. Now, you know, getting to making us feel safe with dash cams and, you know, there's still all kinds of problems. Of course, they just have to turn it off or, oh, it mysteriously broke before you had the shit beaten out of them. But I also saw that they have these self-editing cameras now that'll make sure they edit out any of the boring moments. And what's it going to take as we're broadcasting different events or presidential meetings or speeches? Remember Hillary Clinton had to do a blue screen. I don't remember what the reason was, but one of the debates was done with the presidential candidates on blue screen. There's going to be some point in the future we're not going to know whether or not to trust what our own eyes are telling us. And with the advent of virtual reality, HD, terabit per second coming soon to VR goggles near you, there's going to be a full bleeding of reality and fantasy. that we never even dreamed of. There is a new Photoshop for voice app from Adobe that also lets you put words in people's mouths. So add to that being able to recreate and make someone like Donald Trump or George Bush look like they're saying something while you're actually doing the mouthing. Well, now you can put words in people's mouths as well. Software giant Adobe has teased a powerful new audio editing app that could forever change the way we view the authenticity of recorded speech. Dubbed Project Voco, the prototype might be best described as a Photoshop for voice, enabling anyone to freely edit the spoken content in audio recordings in much the same way like programs like Photoshop allow you to edit visual data. Previewing the app at the Adobe Max 2016 conference last week, researchers Zhen Jin from Princeton University showed just how easy it will be in the near future to manipulate and transform sound files and, in extreme cases, effectively put words that were never actually said into people's mouths. Ding! When audio editing apps have long enabled people to manually cut, copy, and splice together parts of a sound wave, Voco, standing for voice conversation, operates on a new principle using an algorithm that breaks down and recompiles human speech. Adobe hasn't explained how this technology works just yet, but the software seems to identify and log phonemes, the individual speech sounds that we put together to make up words and sentences. And with the right amount of sound data on file, which Adobe says is about 20 minutes of one person talking, Voco will actually have recorded enough of these phonemes to basically impersonate that person by stitching them together into new word and sentence formations. Do you guys understand how frightening this is? We won't be able to trust what is said or what we see or hear. In this clip, and, you know, they can tell us anybody is a criminal based upon a facial scan, or anybody is lying based upon some vision of a micro expression. They'll be able to judge and jury you by something that may not even be real. And then show it to your family and say, look, he's a criminal. You never even knew it. It's just, this is making me dizzy, just thinking about this. So far, this may not be anything extraordinary, since all these words appeared in the original recording. But then Jin types in a new word that wasn't part of the audio, inserting a name to a given sentence to give it a wholly different significance. To take it further, Jin then edits the audio to make it say something completely different. It is worth pointing out that the recording, when played back, does sound a little glitchy, but with the pacing of the speech being just a little off. But bear in mind, this is only a prototype. Unlike Photoshop and its many clones, though, which has broad appeal, would this need to be a kind of audio editing trickery? Adobe is pitching Voco at media, podcasters, filmmakers, and the audio industry for professionals, arguing that the ability to nip and tuck speech recordings will make their working lives easier. Ding. All in the name of convenience. When recording voiceovers, dialogue, and narration, people often like to change or insert a word or a few due to either a mistake they made or simply because they would like to change part of the narrative. Well, with Voco, you can simply type in the word or words that you would like to change or insert into the voiceover, and the algorithm does the rest, making it sound like the original speaker said those words. Now, I'm pretty horrified here that these people are thinking this is such a great thing, This is not such a great thing. Until Voco gets released, Adobe has not confirmed a time frame. We also won't know whether humans are the only thing that it can fool. And remember, there are biometrics out there that already use your voice prints. That would be easily tricked with a tool such as this. Biometric companies say their products would not be tricked by this because they are looking for things that are not the same things that humans look for when identifying people. So don't worry about it. The only way to find out is to test them, and it will be some time before we know the answer. All right, so in the last few minutes of the show, I'm going to share with you something freaky I found. There's a company out there that is now called Soul something. Oh, and I think I just closed it. Hold on. I think it's Soul Machines. Oh, I don't have it up here. Well, we'll watch the video first. And while we're watching the video, I will find the story. So this is a story on this Baby X, this virtual reality baby, that one of the artificial effects designers for the AI that created Avatar has been working on. And he's taken it a step further. He has created an Avatar baby online with a back end of artificial intelligence that can learn from you using its visual processing unit, looking at you from the other side, the inside of the monitor, and then interacting. And they've been able to teach it something. This is taking place in New Zealand right now, and they just got a big chunk of funding, $7.5 million, if I am not mistaken, to further this research. And they created a new company called Soul Machines. But the beginning of Soul Machines was this Baby X. So let's play this. This freaky baby could be the future of AI.
The face. It's our primary means of communication.
Yeah.
But it's been untapped in terms of a human-computer interface.
How can I help you?
The computer can express itself to you in a human-like way, which is emotional, it's cognitive.
No. No.
That's when you start getting to this sort of interesting place.
The fellow you meet next is a madman in the best possible way.
I'm going to pull the muscles which basically lower the brow.
He's Mark Sager, a computer scientist at the University of Auckland.
So nose wrinkler would be, yeah, let's see the nose wrinkler. Pinch his nose up.
Mark became famous for building super detailed simulations of the human body and ended up winning a couple of Oscars for his work on films like Avatar and King Kong.
So, let's go here and, you know.
These days, Mark is, how to put this, trying to reverse engineer the human brain. He's built a series of simulations around how the human face moves, how we express emotion, and how our neurons fire.
We're trying to build a computer which has experiences, can imagine, and basically it has its own sort of existence in a way. So now what we're going to do is I'm going to run Baby X. What we're building here is a computer that can learn. So this is Baby. She's sort of looking at us and hearing us. So if I make a loud noise, you know, she'll get a fright. This is what she can see. So you can see my face here.
I see that.
All right, so she's not copying my smile, she's responding to me. And now this is her little first, baby's first word book. So you can pick a page, you know, show her something, but she has to be looking at it, so get her attention.
Hi baby, hi, hi, hi. What do you see? What's this?
Puppy.
Puppy, very good. What's that baby?
Apple.
This is because we're in New Zealand, you gotta show her a sheep.
Yeah, I'll give her the word, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Hi baby, hi. What do you see, baby?
Sheep.
Sheep. Very good, baby.
Now, the long-term goals is, can we create a computational model of consciousness? Because then you can go, okay, the computer model has just become conscious of something. Is that thought or not?
Yeah.
Now, all the facial expressions, everything's driven by neural nets. So as we look around, what I'm going to do now is remove her face, basically. And so this is what's driving in the background. And so what you're looking at now, these are all the connections lighting up, right, as the baby's doing stuff.
And this is like a simulation of what would be happening running in a person's brain.
Yeah, because if you're going to make a character biological and behave naturally, then you've got to use a natural model. So that's the sort of what's going on inside baby X. Now we take this stuff and we now connect it to cognitive computing systems. So you've got biological neural networks connected to artificial intelligence models, and the potential for that's enormous. That's where the future's probably going to be.
This was so horrifying. He was showing that as this baby X was learning, and it was an actual representation, an AI baby on a screen looking at you from the inside of the monitor, that they were able then to zoom in on the baby's brain, and they had full imaging of this brain, and as the baby was interacting, they were showing different parts of the brain lighting up. They were able to show the heart beating, and he has a full representation of the human body in digital form down to every neuron, showing how it lights up and interacts. I mean, this, guys, this has gotten to the point of the machine is coming. The singularity is very near. So I saw a story then after I ran across this video, AI and avatar company Soul Machines raises Series A investment. Auckland, New Zealand, Soul Machines, a developer of intelligent, emotionally responsive avatars, today announced that it has raised $7.5 million. This investment will allow Soul Machines to deliver on its vision of humanizing technology, ding ding, to create intelligent and emotionally responsive human-like avatars that augment, ding, and enrich the user experience for customers and markets adopting artificial intelligence-based platforms. Soul Machines, which formally launched as a result of this investment, is built on the technology behind Baby X, the first avatar created by the company's founder, CEO Dr. Mark Sanger. A two-time Oscar-winning scientist, Mark's work on Baby X is leading the way in the development of completely new interaction models between humans and machines. Mark and his team provide an emotional and social reasoning platform to existing and developing intelligence in the AI industry. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around. All kinds of great radio today. Have a happy day, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.